one into the night. Deep into right. Way out of here.
Swung on.
Bit crushed.
And the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
From WHYY, welcome to your Friday edition of Hittin' Season, a Philadelphia Phillies podcast. I'm Justin Clue, and I write for Baseball Prospectus, and I'm the author of Summer of the Cheap Wieners, what the 1941 Phillies were up to while Joe DiMaggio was making history, available from booksellers now. With me is Liz Rocher, the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. Hello, Liz.
Hello. Hello, hello. Happy Gray Friday here.
Happy gross late August Friday to us all. Anyone stepping out on their front porch this morning gets a fresh breath of early day humidity and why not just a puff of pollen as well. But hey, regardless of the time of year it is, for me, August is a bottom 3 month, if not the worst month, I will say, just as an experience. I think the August experience is generally very bad. And the Phillies would disagree with that, Liz, because as John Clark tells us, the Phillies are the best team in baseball in the month of August 2026, with a 17-7 record, a .273 batting average, 251 strikeouts for Phillies pitchers, and just a hair shy of 5.5 runs scored per game. Only the Boston Red Sox have scored more. Now, Liz, I know dropping 2 out of 3 in Seattle, you know, that didn't put people in a great mood, and it also did put their most worrisome development on display, but I think people felt good about the exquisite Jesus Luzardo performance in the finale, the 6 runs the Phillies were able to hang on the Mariners, and the 10 wins in 12 games before heading off to Anaheim. West Coast jet lag, no longer an issue, presumably. They got a whole off day to recover and get from Seattle to Anaheim. So, Liz, when we were entering the recording for this episode, did you think I was going to, that we would be having a conversation about the best team in baseball in August? Was that your general thinking about the Phillies going into this?
No, them dropping 2 of 3 against Seattle really made me feel like, why am I paying attention to them right now again? It's the end of August. Let's move on.
Well, but, I mean, part of that's the difference, that, like we've talked about before, when you win 1 out of 3, but the one you win is the last one, that has a much different effect than if they'd gone into Seattle, won a 10th game in a row, and then dropped the next two. People would probably be pretty down on this team going into Anaheim, but I think since it went the other way, it kind of has the reverse effect.
Yeah, I would say. Excuse me. The Phillies are... You were talking about how much I hate August, and I feel like every baseball player hates August, too.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just that month before anything happens, and it feels like everything that happens is sort of like forever now. We're almost in September, and like all of the stuff that's happening feels like, well, this is definitely going to affect them in the playoffs. And so now everything that's wrong with the Phillies, I'm like, well, this is terrible news for the playoffs. I need to stop paying attention for a day or two.
That is so accurate. Everything that's going wrong is something you can see going wrong in the postseason very easily in August, or be the reason you don't make the postseason in August, because, and I think you can honestly see, and I wasn't planning to talk about this, so apologies, but I think you can kind of see that reflected in all of the conversation around Trey Turner, which is that in August, it's not June anymore, which feels obvious, but in the debate or the conversation around Trey Turner, you kind of see like, well, is it a slump? Or is it a decline? Like, is what's happening permanent, or is this just a guy who needs to make an adjustment? And you can kind of see the argument for either way, but I think it's tilting more towards decline at this point, because that little hiccup of Trey Turner's success we saw a couple weeks ago turned out to just be a hiccup, and you start to think, all right, is this what we have in store? Are we looking forward to a couple of good weeks every couple of months? Because that's not a great version of Trey Turner that you won everywhere, but also at this point in his career, and to the point we're making here, at this point in the season, you have a large enough sample size to kind of make a point about, with most of the season already played out and one more month left to go, and you can very easily see how issues that are happening now could very well carry on into October. So a guy like Trey Turner, who's been struggling the way he's been struggling for almost the entire year, you know, it becomes easy to see what sort of problems that could create moving forward. Now, granted, we've seen countless times where a guy does figure something out. And maybe even this isn't, maybe this is a decline, but we do get a hot couple of weeks from Trey Turner here for whatever reason. Because he talked to Ichiro Suzuki in the outfield while they were in Seattle, and some of his magical vibes came through the air on his breath and got inside Trey Turner's head. Who cares why? Like, you never really know. Like, one of these guys can figure it out, and Turner can certainly figure it out, but I wouldn't feel, and don't feel, particularly encouraged to that respect, because it is August, because we are this deep into the season with this much left to play and the playoffs right around the corner. Like, that makes a guy in his position, which he's not the only one across baseball, but that's the conversation I was reading this morning. And you're right, that makes it a real tough month on top of all the, you know, wet grossness that I also described earlier with August bringing with it. So, yeah, I feel like that's a pretty good characterization. I mean, do you feel like Trey Turner at this point, where do you land on this debate? And if the Good Fight comment section is any indication, it's a hot one and people have lots of feelings.
I don't know what to think about him anymore. He's definitely not the player that the Phillies signed.
No,
I don't think that can be argued. I think, you know, I'm always in favor of baseball players getting paid, but they're paying a lot for a lot less than they thought they would. I've been trying not to care about Trey Turner because I know there's nothing that can be done. He's just going to keep doing it. He's just going to keep doing the stuff that we hate. He's not going to be good. He's going to be good for like 4 days and then it's over. I try not to think of him. I try to put like a big blurry sign in my vision when he's on screen, just because I can't handle, the debate is too much. Like, what, there's nothing to be done about it besides continuing to play him, right?
Well, I mean, again, and that comes down to where are we and what is available. When they moved everybody in the infield around, they moved everybody except Trey Turner. I believe the Phillies said themselves they haven't really had a conversation about moving him to the outfield, and you got to wonder what that would even do at this point and what kind of negatives would come along with any kind of positives. Not everybody is Bryson Stott and can just play a different position. He doesn't have a hit in his last four games, but I'm kind of like, to the extent that I'm with you, I would say, yeah, I'm kind of glad we're not doing like one fielding error a night now. Like,
oh my
we've
God,
moved
yes.
off that. So that's kind of, I accept that. But yeah, you know, he's got two hits in his last seven games, and they were both in the same game. He didn't have any hits against the Mariners, had a big old 0 for 13, forgot how to do math there for a second. Just kidding, I never learned. And five strikeouts throughout that series. Batting average has dipped down to 239. OPS is down to 671. And that is where you see the difference, I think, from guys like Harper and Schwarber. Because the point gets made, well, these guys have also struggled really deeply. And during this season, they've gone through really bad slumps as well. Why don't they get shrieked at? Well, the answer is, I think people forget about the level of shrieking once the shrieking subsides that they have been shrieked for sure. But
always
Turner's has just gone on longer because Turner's struggles have gone on longer. And statistically, when you look at stuff like weighted runs created, Turner's gone far lower than like career norms and league averages. Whereas the other two have not only managed to bounce back, but also, if you look at like the kind of statistics I'm talking about, they're not too far off other numbers they've put up throughout their careers. And Schwarber was hitting career highs in a lot of ways last year too. So being like lower than that isn't a crime against baseball. So
no, it doesn't Turner, mean he's bad now.
No, it doesn't. And you know, we all know that Schwarber's stat columns carry an asterisk that just explains that it's Kyle Schwarber. So you got to look at it a little differently anyway. But Turner he's been down there in that hole for most of this season. And yeah, it's tough to see when things are going to turn around. And I think the way I've started to think about it is, can this team get better or make the adjustments in areas where they are maybe an adjustment away? And you don't have to wonder if they are. And in those ways, improve so that you can carry on with Trey Turner even without him playing anywhere near his best. Because offensively against the Mariners, Turner wasn't the only one not hitting. You know, I said, he had a big old, let me rephrase. Turner was the only one literally not hitting and going completely over
Giant goose egg, baby.
I mean, you know, Garrett Stubbs and Brian De La Cruz went hitless in that series, but they also only had 4 combined plate appearances. Turner had 13 and couldn't muster a hit throughout that entire series. And that is where you're going to get a narrative start to form if the Phillies didn't have another more important player who was also struggling, who we're going to talk about in a minute. But even Brandon Marsh managed to get a hit in Seattle, and Alec Boehm, too. Your offense was chiefly driven, almost exclusively driven, in Seattle by Bryson Stott, who had 5 hits, 1 for extra bases, and Bryce Harper, who has been on fire in the month of August, which, mm-hmm. you know, as the antithesis to being shrieked at, you don't hear too much about it, frankly. You're not really seeing the headlines about how Bryce Harper is, like, absolutely crushing it, because Bryce Harper is absolutely crushing it. Bryce Harper hit 545 in Seattle against the Mariners. He had one of the Phillies' 3 home runs. Real Muto and Kyle Schwarber had the other 2. He knocked in a couple of runs. He had 4 singles. He had a double. In general, just a fantastic series from Bryce Harper. And yeah, most of the Phillies' offense came in Game 3, the game they won. They had 21 collective hits in that series. 10 of those hits came in Game 3. So almost half of the offense generated came in Game 3. But MLB.com writes, as far as Harper, his two-hit day extended his on-base streak to a career-best 29 straight games.
Ooh.
The last time he didn't reach base safely was July 25th, more than a week before he moved to the outfield. Yeah, that's for you, Liz. Harper has a .509 on-base percentage for the month of August, which would match the best month of his career, April 2017. He's been on base so much that his on-base percentage actually went down by reaching only twice in 4 plate appearances on Wednesday in the finale against Seattle. So like I said, the reason you know Bryce Harper is crushing it is that no one is talking about it. Lord knows we can only talk about how much Trey Turner is playing poorly again, and can they move him to the outfield, or can they put him on waivers, which somebody brought up. No, the answer is no.
Oh my God.
They're not going to do any of that.
He's not Eugenio Suarez. Jeez.
Oh, yeah. That was rough, but also, yeah, he's not in that position for sure. So, I mean, Liz, this team won 9 straight, then flew across the country and looked not great. They also are suffering through a down period with Zach Wheeler, which, again, we're going to get to in a second. But overall here, as they leave Seattle, you know, with can this team work with, like, 3 things performing very well and, like, 4 things being problems? Is that how it's operated, like, all year long, with just those numbers fluctuating, swapping between columns? This is a problem, this is not a problem, and things just kind of, like, moving back and forth between those 2 columns, and you just have enough in the column that's good that this team can win, like, and stay 12 games over .500 or whatever?
I think that might be the most accurate, like, sort of metaphor for what the Phillies are like that I've heard. That it's just there are 2 columns and a bunch of crap. And some of them at one time are good things, and the rest of them are problems right now. And they just move back and forth. That's a great way to describe it. And I do think a team like that can win. It just depends on what 3 things are in the good column at any given time. And unfortunately, we can't control that.
Yeah, I mean, I think control isn't even a conversation. August, it's not even a conversation worth having, because once again, you have learned time and time again that there is no control.
It's a lesson that baseball fans, including us, have to learn every single year. And that's not a mark against us. It's just the way baseball is built and the way human beings are built. We want control over everything. And it takes us a while to figure out, oh, no, this is not even involving me. No one on this team knows I exist. There's no way I'm impacting this.
I'm not looking at it, so it's not a part of my life.
Yep.
But yeah, that's definitely true. And now, speaking of that worrisome development that I keep hinting at, that we do have to talk about. According to Charlotte Varnes of The Athletic, Caleb Cotham, Phillies pitching coach, says the struggling Zach Wheeler, who just gave up 5 runs in the first inning of his last start, is, quote, just a click off, but I don't think it's big adjustments. And that's in Scott Lauber's story on The Inquirer. The whole angry Zach Wheeler angle petered out when he couldn't really back up his emotional level with effective ace-level pitching over his last 5 or 6 starts. Mm-hmm. I've decided to let that claim that he's just a little bit off be true. I've decided that, yes, that's he's going to do something, because he's going to get one of these three starts against the Angels, and he's going to do something that makes him look a little better. Because for a second there, I thought the Phillies were going to be the team that let Cal Raleigh figure it out in 2026, as he homered three times off of them and then again. But I do think that had more to do with Zach Wheeler's mistakes. You know, like the velo's there, the placement is not. And, you know, when Cotham says, I don't think we're talking about a lot of adjustments, who knows what other motivations go into this is what I want the answer to be out there in public. But I, like I said, I've decided to accept that, because Wheeler is too good and he's been doing this for too long to be a complete disaster. It's like the same thing we said with Painter, who has now not looked better than he has all season, which was that he started from too high a place to look as lost as he has. And the same is now true for Wheeler. You know, the parallel, I think, is there. He's coming from too high a place. And yes, we all know his health issues and what he had to get over to be here. But I don't, I, according to everyone, that's not really a factor here. And I don't think there's any reason to think like this is over, because, you know, it can't be. A Phillies team without an effective Zach Wheeler isn't really a long-term Phillies playoff team.
No, we'll be ending the show for the season if he goes down again. It'll just be over.
So,
because they desperately need him. Like, the one thing in the Charlotte Barnes article that has stuck out to me is him saying, all I can really throw for a strike, a good quality strike, is a fastball right now. And that's not even fully consistent. That's a frightening two sentences right there.
Yeah. Why'd you say that? Go back to the Cotham thing, where he's just a second away from figuring it out. Oh, no, I'm talking to him when I say that. Don't worry about it. Don't tell me that. Just lie to me like everyone else. Oh, you know, I'm making the adjustments I need to make and trying to work it out.
I mean, I love Wheeler. He's just like, straight up, this sucks. I don't know what's going on. The only thing I could throw for a strike is this. Hitters, take notice. I'm sucking. I love it, though. I mean, I love a guy who's honest about this baseball stuff, because a lot of guys aren't. And it's just, you know, it's media training. But I love the dudes who are like, yeah, this sucks. I can only throw one pitch. It's not what I want. I'm miserable.
You're not wrong, and neither is he, because since July 15th, Zach Wheeler has an ERA over, do you want to guess what number I'm about to say? An ERA over?
Is it seven?
Seven is the answer. He has a 7.18 ERA. He's allowed 40 strikeouts to 16 walks, 9 homers, and 36 hits total in 7 starts. The last 6 seasons, Wheeler has ended a season with a strikeout-to-walk ratio well over 20%. Since July 15th, it's been 16.7. Zach Wheeler has been struggling, and he knows it, and he doesn't really want to talk about it. Neither do I. Meanwhile, Chris Sale of the Braves is pitching how we'd hoped Zach Wheeler would be pitching at this point. Chris Sale pitched a complete game shutout versus the Dodgers last night with 5 hits and 11 strikeouts, no walks. The Braves swept the Dodgers in Atlanta. To quote a very dear friend of mine who texted me as soon as that game was over, the Dodgers are useless. And they remain 5 games. The Braves remain 5 games ahead of the Phillies. With September bearing down on us. So, Liz, this season started with the Phillies like 11 games out of first place. Then they narrowed that to 2. Then they fell back to 9. Then they narrowed that to 3. And now we're falling back to 5. So you tell me. It's August, like we keep saying, because that's important context here. It's basically September, but it is still August at this recording. Is this Phillies team going to be known for, like, getting right to the finish line and then dropping back? And then right to the finish line and then dropping back?
Oh,
or
God.
Are they going to use this last few weeks to overtake the Braves?
I would love it if they overtook the Braves, but I can't see it happening. They just swept the Dodgers. I mean, it's all late season baseball nonsense, as all of this is. But, like, it's not nothing. Like, the Phillies, I don't see them. I mean, the Braves are hot right now, and so I think they'll take it. I think they'll take the NL East, and that'll be that. And I think that's fine. They've been better than the Phillies all season. That's the thing. It's not like the Braves are doing better and I don't think they deserve it. I hate them. I hate them. But they're a better team than the Phillies, even with, you know, with what they've got right now. I mean, the Phillies are a better team on paper, but the Braves are just a better team on the field. It's just the way it is. And so I'm fine with them not winning at all. And it would be fun if they got close. If they got close and even didn't make it, that would still be fun because they're still making the playoffs. I just want them to make up their mind. Are you going to go for it? Then go for it. If not, then just be mediocre and give us a chance to catch our breath.
Braves are 14-10 in August. They were 11-10 before this series with the Dodgers, which, you know, any Phillies fan would have been great. Would have been very excited. Oh, if in terms of doing better than the Braves, it's so good that they have to play the Dodgers now. Well, they used that series to go up 14-10 in the month of August. Obviously, we said the Phillies are 17-7, so the Braves have not been as sharp as the Phillies over the past month. They are 5-5 in their last 10. And as far as future schedules go, I mean, the Phillies get the Angels, who they should be able to beat, and the Diamondbacks, who, frankly, they should be able to beat. And then the Phillies come home and play the Braves after that. That's what I was going for. That the Phillies got the Mariners, Angels, and Diamondbacks before this series with the Braves. That's probably going to be pretty important. Four games with the Braves at the start of September. The Braves had to play the Dodgers, swept them. And as a reward, they now get to play the Rockies and the Giants at home. Two lousy teams. Then they do have to go to Washington for two games and play the Nationals as well. But I believe they might have an off day before and after that series. I think they do. They have off.
Ew.
Yeah. They have off days before.
Who are they?
Me?
Come on.
So, yeah, they could be well rested coming into this series with, just the one off day on Thursday before they get to Philadelphia. But still, they'll be well rested and they'll have been playing some beatable teams after sweeping the least beatable team in all of baseball. So, yeah, if you're looking right now, all you can really hope is that, yeah, let's hope the Phillies sort of don't lose what grasp they still have on their momentum. Yeah. Because you want this to be a competitive, you want that series to mean something, you know, against the Braves. Four games against the Braves in September.
You want it to
should
mean
be
more
an important series for this Phillies team.
Yes. None of us want to spend 3 days watching these games being miserable and then ending it being miserable. Like in order for everyone to feel better, I think they need to win 2 out of 3 against the Braves.
They play 4 games against the Braves.
Four games.
So
well, then
be
they need
even messier.
Oh, great. I take that back and I have no comment.
That means you might even get a Chris Sale, Zach Wheeler game to really spice up the narrative.
Do you want to make me vomit cry right now? Because I'll do it.
All right. Well, let's switch topics to avoid that. Hey, the Phillies made some changes in the front office. These are the kind of things that, you know, don't contain the most familiar names to everybody, but do have a lot of importance. Now, Liz, to get the ball rolling here with what the Phillies did to restructure some things in their front office, do you recall the name Anirudh Kalambi?
I do.
Yes.
Sort of.
He
I remember
someone
reading
we talked
it somewhere.
About on this show. We talked about, and he is one of those guys that you only really talk about once you find out he is leaving. And that is why we were talking about him last time we discussed Kalambi on this show. He was hired by the Phillies after the 2021 season. He was the assistant general manager for the Phillies who oversaw big. He was a big advanced stats guy. He oversaw research and development for the Phillies. He worked very closely with Caleb Cottom. He had a reputation for spotting underlying pitching ability. And he was 27 years old when he was hired. So he was a wunderkind of sorts. Well, like I said, the reason his name may be at all familiar is because last time we talked about him, he was being poached by the Washington Nationals. And now at 31 years old, Kalambi is part of the youthful Nationals leadership that has 36-year-old president of baseball ops Paul Toboni and 34-year-old manager Blake Butera. It was viewed as a big loss for the Phillies to say goodbye to Kalambi, especially to a division rival. And it was such a loss, it seems, that the role had remained vacant since the offseason until, according to Charlotte Varnes in The Athletic, now. Now, Dan Aucoin is taking over the Phillies R&D department, per MLB trade rumors. He has a background with driveline baseball, began consulting for the Phillies at the beginning of the decade, and he accepted a full-time position in 2023 and has spent 4 years in their analytics department. Aucoin has a background with driveline baseball, began consulting for the Phillies at the beginning of the decade. He accepted a full-time position in 2023 and has spent 4 years in their analytics department. The Phillies also hired Luke Merton for a newly created role called the Assistant General Manager of Hitting. Merton has been the Director of Player Development and been in charge of the farm system and is in his fourth season with the Phillies. A new farm director, the team says, will be hired in the winter. This gives the Phillies, Liz, a super team of five Assistant General Managers. You've got Assistant General Manager. This is great because it's like the Power Rangers. Assistant General Manager of Amateur Scouting, Brian Barber. Assistant General Manager of Research and Information, Dan Aucoin. Assistant General Manager of Hitting, Luke Merton. And then two regular Assistant General Managers with no specifications to their titles, Jorge Volandia and Ned Rice, who is also the Vice President of Business Operations. But speaking of Rice, he will be taking on more tasks on the business side with all of this restructuring and passing baseball duties on to Director of Baseball Ops, Corinne Landry. Hey, Corinne. Corinne, shout
out.
Hi,
Corinne. We love you, Corinne.
As well as Edwin Soto, the recently promoted manager of baseball administration. Now, I'm not going to act like these are household names, though there's an argument to make in some cases that these are the people responsible for some of the Phillies' issues more so than the players or the manager. But in any case, they've moved some people around. created a new
Luke
job.
Merton has been there for 4 years, and they didn't fire him for moving the Phillies down to 29th in the farm system rankings. They simply moved him over. The Phillies don't like to fire people, I guess. They don't.
This was a lot of moving around, and a new job was created. Some responsibility was shifted. Significant change to the landscape, I'd say. I don't have to tell you how low the Phillies farm system is ranked currently. I will. Baseball America placed it 29th out of 30. And this isn't the kind of thing that gets turned around overnight. The idea of like, oh, a farm system is bad. Obviously, there is restocking that needs to take place. And you got to wonder, like, how does that happen? And when does that happen? I've been bringing up the idea of how the catcher of the future still isn't in this organization and hasn't been for quite some time. These are not things that happen quickly. It has to do with like a lot of changes like this, changes we're going to see in the off season, and also just like the passage of time and the development of players and the trading of players and the acquisition of players is going to play a huge role in this moving forward. But Liz, is there anything about these shifts just on their own that just makes you feel better? Do you like the idea of having an assistant general manager with a focus on hitting, a new job in the Phillies organization, that baseball forward responsibilities are now going to go to some people who are newer to them? Or do you put a lot of hope in the idea of a new farm director, whoever that may be? Like, are these in general, is this not necessarily news we were waiting to hear, but like, here it is. And these are things that people often bonk the Phillies on the head for. Their in-house like the development, player development, minor league system. All of it is stuff that has been a big flaw for this team. Honestly, like I keep saying, for most of my life, I don't remember seeing like a top 10 Phillies farm system. So are these aspects that make you feel better about the future? Or is it just kind of like filing paperwork at this point and we'll see what happens?
It's a little bit of a combination. It's stuff that had to happen. You know, you don't have, like, it was a big story that the Phillies were so low, at least within the Phillies, you know, the Phillies fandom. It was a huge deal, and they need God knows who they're gonna hire, but they need someone new, they need someone different. I think Dave Dombrowski did a great job with getting everybody in the minors and the majors on the same page, and that was a big step. And now that they've done that and it's been sort of applied and everyone's doing it, now it's time to actually, I don't know, improve things in a measurable way. And because they haven't done that, they definitely needed to hire new people. I'm glad that they're going outside for a farm director. The Phillies have been, as you can see.
We can't say that they're going outside for farm director. We don't know who the farm director is going to be.
But at this point, we can say at this moment, they don't believe that the person to lead the farm system is in their organization. I would say if they did, they'd be doing an interview and announce it. But, I mean, they'll certainly interview internal candidates, but the Phillies love to hire people they know, people who've been in the organization forever. They like to move people around instead of firing people. They just created a whole new thing for this one guy who, you know, who did not do great things with their farm system is now working on hitting. And I have no expertise to comment on that, but they need to start going outside. Like Dombrowski, for me, it was a big step. It was outside of their ecosystem. You know, even McClintock was sort of, though he was a surprise and he was taken on it, once you looked back at, you know, the trail of things, it made sense. There was still a connection there, despite us all being angry about it. The Phillies have done that before. They do it again, and I'd like to see them stop. You know, the organization is great, and I know they have wonderful people in there that have been there forever. Their PR person has been there for probably 40 years, which is insane. But there's a place for that type of business, and that it's not here now. It's not here and it's not now. You know, there's a place for the type of management and leadership that David Montgomery showed. But at this moment, you're looking at a team whose job it is to develop players to play baseball on their team, and they are essentially the worst at it of 2019, of 30 teams. There's one other team below them. And when you get below 25, they're all crap. I mean, it's essentially just under 20, after 25, 26 through 30 is all, these are all crap. These teams are bad. You can't even really separate between them.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because that's a great thing to pivot towards. Long periods of downward results from the Phillies and their farm system is exactly what we're going to shift to here.
Wonderful.
Because the Phillies play the Angels next for a weekend in Anaheim, like I said. And these teams don't have a lot of history together, but I did want to hit on a note or two in regards to the Phillies and Angels. Before I do, though, yeah, just to close the loop, anytime you're making some significant change to your farm system and you're the Phillies, I'm going to be hopeful that this was the change that improves things in a way I have never seen them truly and over a long time improve. I'm going to hope that their judgment in who is taking on which responsibilities and who is entering what position is based on, you know, what positive change they can see happening moving forward. And, you know, I'm ready to see this team. And I've said it before, since Dombrowski took over, the goal isn't just to make a World Series team out of the current Phillies. The goal is to elevate the franchise, to be up on the same level as other franchises that are perennial contenders, to make down eras into down seasons, to make sure this team doesn't go 10 years, 12 years without sniffing the playoffs again, to make sure that this is a team that, even if it's not the best at everything all of the time, still has a usable farm system and a contending Major League Baseball team, so that it's never impossible that they are going to be worth watching. That, I felt like, was not even that crazy of a goal, and that was that was something I sort of assigned this era of Phillies to truly do. And, you know, hey, they've been making the playoffs every year since 2022. Looks like they'll probably make them again this year. And disappointing results at that point aside, that's still a measuring stick for a successful era, even though you could say at a certain point, is it a success if they're not winning the World Series? That's a different argument. The point is elevation. And I hope, since we don't know yet what these changes will actually lead to, we can just say, hopefully these are changes that are a part of that overall elevation of the franchise. And in some cases, I don't think you create a job for a guy unless he is specifically, you know, suited for that role, regardless of how things went previously. You know, we'll have to see. We'll have to see who's in their job because it's something they're truly, you know, going to be good at and going to help the organization, and who's in a job because, you know, the Phillies are a family. And like you said, they don't super seem to like firing people. So, well, as with all things, we'll have to see. But I hope this is part of an overall push to bring the franchise up a couple of levels and make sure that every time, you know, in the near future that we're going to Phillies games, you're going to see a team that's worth going to see with a farm system that can help support it. That's what I would like the end result of all of this to be. And I think, you know, the Phillies would tell you the same thing. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But like I said, next up, the Phillies play the Angels. And did you know, Liz, on June 9th, 2003, the Phillies and Angels played their first interleague regular season game against each other after the institution of interleague play, which, by the way, started in like 97. So it took them a while, but they did finally play each other as a result of interleague play. Well, they used to do it by division. Like it used to be AL East plays NL East. And now this year the NL East is playing the Central. So it took them a while to get to the West and finally the Angels. And the Phillies won that game June 9th, 2003, 3-0. And did you know, Liz, in 2022, the Phillies swept the Angels as part of their post-Joe Girardi honeymoon with Rob Thompson, crushing them 10-0 and then 7-2, and then sweeping them on a walk-off home run by Bryson Stott that was so resounding that the Angels fired their manager. I'm pretty sure, wasn't that Joe Madden? They fired Joe Madden at that point. So that was great. And did you know that in between that first game in 2003 and those last three in 2022, the Phillies did not win a single game against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And in fact, lost 12 in a row to who I will personally call the most forgettable and least relevant Major League Baseball franchise in my entire lifetime. 12 in a row.
Why do we like this team?
I mean, that's crossing over.
Why do we
eras.
Care about this
That's
team?
Crossing over rosters during which, by the way, they were outscored in these 12 losses 60-22 by the Angels. In that time period, from 2003 to the beginning of 2022, the Angels went to the playoffs more than the Phillies did.
No!
The team famous not for real. Not going and wasting Mike Trout's prime and wasting having Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani in their lineup. That team went to the playoffs more than the Phillies did. I mean, that's that was shocking. That was like when I read last night on Absolutely Hammered that Ben Revere led the National League in hits in 2014. He was the NL hit leader.
What?
Do you remember that? He hit 306 that year. 306 in 151 games.
Yeah, he did.
And yeah, he was tied with Denard Span for the hits lead in the National League.
Denard Span.
Ben Revere. Apparently there's just, you know, a big old blind spot. But yeah, Phillies lost 12 straight to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Incredible. Incredible statistic.
I'll say it again. We've chosen to like this team. As much as we were bored into it, we're people with free will, and we've made these choices. I just look back on it and think, maybe there was another path. Or was there? I can't even.
Well, hey, we are here now, and that I think we can be grateful for. During that losing streak against the Angels, two Phillies players homered off of Angels pitching. Only two. I'm going to ask you to guess who they were, but I'll tell you this. One was from the golden era, the last golden era, and the other one was from the rebuild era. Both of their last names start with W. Who were they?
Was one of them Weston Wilson?
Oh, wow. Great guess.
That's the first
no.
W that came into mind, and he was...
Weston Wilson, by the way,
is not
still
on the
in
rebuild
baseball.
Phillies. Yes, he is. Still he's in with the Mariners now.
Yeah. Seeing him, I was like, wait, is that Weston Wilson still in baseball? Who knew? Yeah, still a couple of bats for the Mariners against the Phillies.
Yeah.
Blew my mind.
Listen,
but
he's still
but
in
no.
the majors, which is a huge thing. I love it.
Not Weston Wilson.
All right.
Keep going. I mean, frankly, it's inexcusable for me to tell you it's a golden era Philly with the last name starting with W, and you don't know.
Oh, it's Jason Wirth. It took me a minute.
Jason Wirth, obviously, homered off Joe Saunders of the Angels. And the other one, I've got another hint for you that'll probably make you get it, but I'm not going to give it to you yet.
Okay,
but,
give me a second.
W last name from the rebuild era.
Okay.
Which obviously went on for a very long time. But we can narrow it if you want.
Oh, come on. Look, I hate that Weston Wilson is the only one sticking in my head right now. I can't remember anyone else with a W.
Yes, you can.
I remember.
I think you
no,
liked this guy
pitcher.
In particular. I'm pretty sure this was a guy you attached to at a certain point.
Of course
point.
It is.
Yeah.
someone I can't even remember. All right, give me another hint. I'm striking out. I feel like an idiot, as I always do.
Striking out and feeling like an idiot? Wow, you sure you don't know who this guy is? All right, so that your hint is he hit an inside-the-park home run on the last day of the season 1 year.
Oh, my God. Is it Nick Williams?
It is Nick Williams.
Ah, there we go.
Jason Wirth and Nick Williams, your two home run hitters off the Angels. Over a 12 game losing streak over many years between the Phillies and Angels. They have since that, including that sweep in 2022, the Phillies have gone 8-4 against the Angels. So they've corrected things, I think you could say. And I don't think anybody would tell you over the last, God, even the last 10 years that one of those franchises has been on an upward trajectory. The other one's just kind of laid about at the bottom. Speaking of managers being fired, Angels skipper and former MLB catcher Kurt Suzuki was noted for only getting a one-year deal from Anaheim. And the general manager who hired him has since been fired. And the Angels are likely to continue their 11-year streak of losing records with another fresh round of culture change talk in Anaheim, despite interim GM John Mosaliak, the architect of some very good Cardinals teams, despite his statement that he's had a pretty positive relationship with Suzuki. Liz, do you think Kurt Suzuki isn't long for this world as the Angels skipper, especially could the Phillies once again be the breaking point for an Angels manager if they beat them badly enough this weekend?
Kurt Suzuki sucks, so I hope so.
Yeah, he does.
And yeah, based on as a human being, he sucks. And as a baseball player, he also sucked.
Based on what you read about, like, his, he's like, oh, and this is the adjustments I've had to make from being like a manager, from being a player to being a manager. And you're like, oh, yeah. So like the stuff about being a manager, like regulating guys' rest days and balancing the roster. And like, you know, he's apparently been struggling with that. I can't imagine. God. A guy who got a one-year deal and the guy who hired him doesn't work there anymore. I can't imagine. He's got too terribly long left. But who knows? Who knows? Who knows what they like about having him there?
He publicly admitted that he has trouble with the very things the manager is hired to do. I mean, when did he say that recently?
Yeah, I believe so, yes. In the Orange County Register.
You know, he's been manager since, I don't know, he's been acting as the manager since February. February. How has even I would have learned it by now, and I stink at a lot of stuff. I can't believe he's still working for them at this moment, actually.
Well, he is, and his job security has, I would say, never been less. So we'll see what the Phillies can do against him and his team over the weekend. But the other Los Angeles team has also been making some headlines this week. There's been a bit of a mess concerning Dodgers ownership and their controlling owner, Mark Walter. According to Major League Baseball trade rumors, the dealings of Dodgers controlling owner Mark Walter's insurance companies are under investigations related to the FBI, the SEC, and the Department of Justice. Now, I know what you're thinking. Aren't those departments just like a hamster with a little police hat on anymore? And I can assure you that nothing in our federal government is that adorable at this moment in time. But you may have picked up on that
badger.
When Walter, whose net worth is $18 billion, began chucking his other assets off the back of his covered wagon as it raced out of town. The Los Angeles Lakers were one of those assets, which Walter had only bought 14 months ago, though he still did make, a $2.5 billion profit from the current sale. Walter is also a minority owner of English Premier League's Chelsea FC, and with him and another Dodgers owner having about 13% shares in that club. No charges have been filed, MLB trade rumors says, but the issue seems to be that some loans made by Walter's insurance companies were not properly reported. A lot of people have followed the breadcrumbs here and seen some, you know, the argument is that this has come back to the argument that every team could spend like the Dodgers, essentially. And this issue that has popped up has been a conclusion of sorts for those people to say, aha, see, the Dodgers were being some kind of suspicious and weird about their finances. Thusly, not every team could have been spending like them because they were breaking the rules. And that kind of proves that, you know, these other teams may need, you know, perhaps a salary cap is a better idea, because that team you were using as an example of like, well, why don't other teams just do this? Well, they were, you know, cutting some corners to do that. Now, in fact, ESPN's Jeff Passan, who went on the air and said after the Dodgers signed Kyle Tucker, which, by the way, he claimed after the Dodgers had signed Tucker that he'd actually never said that the Dodgers, every team should be spending like the Dodgers, and that the Dodgers just like have the code to do it. He said he never said that. He was in community noted to death on Twitter before deleting the tweet that was getting the community notes, correcting him, and then addressed that he deleted it and then said it was a mistake, blah, 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 blah. Obviously, the Dodgers are the number one citation in any argument MLB owners make about baseball's economy being devastated. Mark Walters' financial whoopsies are the foothold people need to ask, you know, how much of this incredibly stacked, talented, and expensive dynasty is the result of the sport being unfair regarding big versus small market teams, and how much of it is because of this bonus cash the Dodgers may have had access to through which, let's call them complex means. Sports Illustrated actually laid it out like this: as the owners push hard for a salary cap to rein in spending, the distinction matters. The Dodgers have become Exhibit A in the league's argument that it needs greater financial restrictions to improve competitive balance. Walter's legal troubles haven't been tied to the Dodgers' outrageous spending, but the ongoing investigation adds another layer to what's already set to be a contentious battle over how the sport is structured. So, Liz, does the Dodgers owner being investigated for improper reporting of these loans from his insurance companies mean that other MLB teams couldn't spend more? I mean, the Dodgers president, Stan Kasten, by the way, he has already come forward and said, Dodgers, we're not selling. They will not be for sale. That's not something that's happening.
That's why he sold the Lakers.
Does this provide the evidence for that side of the argument that no, other teams couldn't be spending like this? There's a reason the Dodgers looked like they were spending in an almost fictional capacity. And now we can put that to rest.
You're asking me if this is definitely giving, like, if fans were the ones to make these decisions, this would put the nail in the coffin. But for the first time, I'm a bit thankful that the owners are at least a bit smarter than that, and they actually do know what's going on. I mean, Walter's not blameless of anything. The man, it's sort of like self-dealing. I think he ended up using some of his own stuff at one of his firms as collateral for something, another loan, it's something like that. And it's stupid and dumb to do. But it doesn't seem to have a lot to do with the Dodgers. And so this is all just optics. This is all just stupid, stupid optics. And it's one that I'm sure that MLB has not stepped in to really take control of. You would think that MLB might release some kind of... They're not. They're not doing anything, really, publicly about this. And it's fascinating for me to see, because it does seem intentional in a way. They're not going to sweep in and help the Dodgers because it looks like they're helping this team that has so much money that they could do whatever they want and spend whatever they want. And so, I mean, I don't know if it's intentional, but I feel like everything MLB does is intentional in some way or another. So, I mean, I'm just glad that the fans don't decide it. I don't think this is, you know, again, everyone else, other people make these decisions, and they are going to know a lot more than we do about it. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if the PA put out an explainer on, excuse me, on what the whole Dodgers thing is, so they understand it. You know, it's something that's happening in baseball that involves some financial stuff, and not a lot of guys know about that. So I'm hoping that they put out an explainer so they understand when things come up going forward in labor negotiations. You know, they already know. No, this is crap. I already know the truth. Don't try and pull the wool over my eyes.
The Dodgers TV deal, which is said to be the crux of their financial windfalls over the years, that is actually reported to allow them to keep $6 billion, give or take. That's...
Oh, my God.
That... And the way that that's structured, you know, speaking in broad terms, because as you say, these are not waters that I'm typically wading into. So to keep it broadly, that TV deal and like that contract and the deal they have with the entity that owns Sportsnet LA, this allows them to operate in the way that they do. And it also just intermixes Mark Walters' financials with the Dodgers, So I can't, I'm not sure I necessarily agree that it has nothing to do with the Dodgers.
No, I guess that might be true.
Especially since, you know, like that feels unfair to say. But on the other hand,
fair.
I don't think even if it comes out like, oh, Mark Walter printed a bunch of fake money and used that to pay more free agents to come to his team. Even if that winds up being the case, how does that get like Bob Nutting off the hook for not spending more on his team? How does that get Dick Monfort off the hook for not improving like his Rockies teams? Like what? I get the argument that like, well, we couldn't be spending like the Dodgers. Okay. But that doesn't mean you couldn't be spending more. Like these teams with little baby payrolls that are not there because they believe in efficiency or they just want to operate like the Rays. Teams that are just like, I would rather just have the money than spend it on the team, which there are plenty of teams doing that. Those guys I just specifically mentioned being some of the most cited examples in that regard. So again, even if this is like a worst case scenario for Mark Walter and the Dodgers, I don't see how that gets these other owners off the hook. Yeah, they don't have to spend to an illegal capacity, but that's not even what their fans are asking them to do. When Bob Nutting walks through that park and people yell, sell the team at him, it's not because he's not like going as far as to commit a litany of white collar crimes that we know of to improve his financial standing to then improve the team. If he was, he wouldn't be using that money to better the team. That's the problem.
Exactly.
Because he doesn't care about the team. Right, exactly. So, I don't see how that necessarily works as the gotcha that it was responded to as. But in any case, wow, what an exhausting and, frankly, very boring problem that's going to be discussed in the weeks ahead. Glad it's not me. Glad it's not the Phillies. But what the Phillies will be dealing with this weekend against the Angels is no Tom McCarthy. Yeah.
It's one of his rare weekends off in the 6 to 8 month period where he works every single FA.
Not really, no. Scott Fransky, according to the Inquirer, will be taking over for the Saturday and Sunday games with Ben Davis. Greg Murphy's calling the game on the radio with Kevin Stocker because, nope, Tom McCarthy's not flying off to broadcast the next Jacksonville Jaguars game, which he always gets the Jaguars game. Always. Yeah. It's always like a Titans-Jaguars game with Tom McCarthy. No, he's actually going to be on Peacock calling a noon game between the Nationals and Marlins.
Nice.
So
good for
he's
him.
Just going to be over there doing that, which, yeah, I mean, good for him. Very cool. Good for you, T-Mac. And if you want to send Ben Davis to go do other stuff, I would support that as well. Phillies and Angels this weekend, Friday night at 9:38. Get ready for some more West Coast late night sicko baseball as the Phillies and Angels square off. It'll be Andrew Painter in game one. Who would have thought this point in the season, in late August, just to go back to that point, we'd be looking forward to the next Andrew Painter start and wondering what we're going to get from the next Zach Wheeler start. This has been a season of swaps and narratives looping around, and this one might be the craziest one of all. But Andrew Painter gets the ball in game one against the Angels. He'll be facing lefty Reed Detmers, who you saw on plenty of trade candidate lists around the trade deadline, but he is still with Anaheim. On Saturday, an even later start at 10:07, Christopher Sanchez gets the ball against Ryan Johnson of the Angels. And then in the finale on Sunday at 4:07 Eastern time, you do get Zach Wheeler in the next phase of that experiment facing Yusei Kikuchi of the Angels. But that'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. My thanks to my co-host, Liz Rocher. You can get new episodes of Hittin' Season 3 times a week anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find bonus Phillies podcasts at the Hittin' Season Patreon at patreon.com/hittin'season. I'm Justin Clue, and from WHYY, that's the ballgame. We'll talk to you next time on Hittin' Season.